What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 110 of Value Town. I'm Jamman V, and joining me, of course, is my co-host Noxious. What's up, buddy?
Not much, man. Just ready to talk about some of the Hearthstone news that were announced recently. Pretty cool.
All right. You look like you're feeling great today, man.
I'm a little bit tired under the weather, but I'll make it through the episode.
Yes.
No problem.
No,
it's fine,
I appreciate
man.
That. That's going to be awesome. And we've got joining us, fresh off his win this weekend, Dr. J, or Dr. Jikaninki.
Dr. Jikaninki.
Yeah, Dr. Jikaninki.
Yeah, up, thanks buddy? For having me out, man. Yeah. I really appreciate this opportunity. Glad to be on the show.
Awesome, man. Yeah, it's going to be fun getting a chance to talk to you about, obviously, your HCT experience, as well as we've got some developer Q&A to talk about. Topic of the week this week is going to be Zoo. We've got Mechatorks, which I promised last week, and I keep my promises, guys. So we've got a bunch of cards. We've even got more cards than we're going to go over. So it's like, it's going to take a few weeks to actually catch up, you know, with all the cards you guys sending so many. And then, of course, we'll do some Q&A at the end. So, yeah, why don't we start off, you know, just getting a chance to talk to you, Dr. J, about HCT and just the whole experience. Obviously, a great experience for you, given that you were the winner and getting a chance to go to the Bahamas. But, yeah, I just want to just overall, just how do you feel right off the bat? And then we'll kind of jump into some of the specifics.
It was kind of a surreal feeling, to be honest. I just, like 3 days before the event, I was like, oh, I'm just going up, hoping to do well. And then ended up winning the whole thing, which is kind of crazy to really be. It's a really surreal feeling. I wasn't expecting it. And I'm just super excited to try and get my name out there now.
Has it sunk in?
Be a part of the big community. It's sinking in. Yeah, it's really crazy.
Okay, that's good. That's good. Well, that's good that we're getting a chance to actually have you on here too, because there's been times that, you know, we don't get a chance to have people that win events on here for whatever reason, whether I can't get a hold of them or, you know, whatever. So, you know, whenever we do get a chance to interview a winner, it's always nice. So HCT, why don't you talk a little bit about your experience, like qualifying for prelims? Cause you know, we've had the Rad on here and a few others and, you know, they've definitely had their opinions of it. What's your opinion of it?
I think it's definitely a grind. I think it's a lot of work you have to put in to get to that position. I had to, my most points were from ladder finishes. So I finished top 50 in two of the seasons. And then I got 2 points from an open cup. So open cups are really grindy. The open cups are just, they're becoming a meme at this point, which is kind of sad.
Yep.
And
pretty much.
Those were basically where all my points came from, was just ladder. And it's a grind. I'd never, until this season, really tried really hard to finish well on ladder, and then I finished well twice, which basically put me in.
Okay, so yeah, ladder's still the focus, obviously. But yeah, there's something up with the cups. Definitely, there's going to have to be some kind of modifications to the cup. Unfortunately, those modifications can't be made until
I know, that's
2018.
The unfortunate thing.
Like, I don't know. What do you guys think about them if they could, or they threw out the suggestion or the possibilities of making an adjustment at the end of each season, you know, so the beginning before the next, you know, season two starts or the summer season starts, would that be actually okay for you guys as players? Or do you think that's unreasonable? Like they started this way, the whole year has to be the same thing.
I think, I'm indifferent. I don't mind them making changes like midway through. I don't mind them constantly making changes, because when you're making changes, you're trying to improve the game, you're trying to improve the atmosphere. So like, for instance, like this is kind of a little off topic, but when they were making changes to the broadcasting, I thought that was a step in the right direction. So even if they make changes like during the season to how the structure is going to work, I wouldn't personally mind it. But I know where some people get frustrated, because it's already been established and it's already been announced to work this specific way. So yeah. It would throw a lot of people off guard if they just came out and say, hey, look, just for this month, it would work this specific way. So I understand where they have to keep it. So I respect like both views.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't have to be this month. It would just be like these 3 months, right? Like the cups will be different. I don't know. You know, like I don't know exactly how they would change it. But I would actually like to see them change it. I feel like the players overall, with even just their feelings right now with how grindy it is, that they'd be very accepting of a change. And these changes, because it's a new season, or, you know, and it's not like the winter season's just completely over. Like, there's nothing really to talk about except for the points you get towards. Once the winter season's over, you guys saw the Bahamas. But once the winter season's over, there's just nothing really left to talk about except for the points that you get towards the end. So I don't think that that's that big of a deal if, you know, the environment's just a tiny bit different, you know, in hopes of improving it, based instead of just waiting a year. Gosh, waiting a year or 9 months is just very painful in my eyes.
Yeah, it's a very slow chain, but that's what we've been used to, right, from Blizzard. So I understand why they're like very cautious about changing the system. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like, one of the things that gets frustrating if you're, you know, top tier player is if you're, let's assume you're top 10 legend, you put a shit ton of work mm-hmm. that month, and then you say, you know, you're told that suddenly your top 10 isn't worth as much this month because they decided to change the structure. Yes, open cups aren't the exact same. But the idea is you've put in a shit ton of work, you've put in a shit ton of time, and then suddenly you're told that it's all for nothing. So at the very least, you need like a month's forewarning, I'd say.
Yeah.
For the change to happen.
Yeah.
But like mid-season, I think would be incorrect. But telling people like, next season something's going to change, I think that's probably something people would welcome.
Yeah, I agree too. So with the prelims, you played where? You played in Virginia.
I played in Fairfax, Virginia.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Who all was there?
We had, sorry for getting on. We had Amnesiac, Frozen, myself, wow. Okay. Terrence M.
Oh, Terrence is there too.
VLPS.
Holy smokes.
The GNC boys. So Muzzy, Nostom, Yoitz Flow, HC, who was a Tavern Hero player. He was there. Jake Finney, Racy was there. Villain, who played Firebat, I think round one, was there. And Bear Nugget. I think those are the all ones I remember. I might be forgetting one or two, but we had a lot of players.
That was stacked. Oh my gosh. Yeah, that's pretty crazy. And for those of you, I guess, for those of us that have never actually gotten a chance to be at one of these venues, what's it like? I mean, is it, you know, are like there chairs there sitting there watching you? Because I mean, I kind of got a glimpse of one of the setups, which is like there's just a backdrop and then lights, and then you're sitting there on a computer basically, right?
Okay, so the way it is it's a really nice, it was a really nice building, really nice like big land kind of area, and they had computers like provided for everyone, and we would go to the back of the area in our own little sanctioned area, and we would each like have our own computer, and there would be admins like behind us tallying all the scores and such, and so that we had like plenty of room, plenty of space. The admins did a really great job with everything.
Oh, that's good.
They
to
took
hear.
Care of us really well. We didn't have that many issues. There were like an issue here or there, but that was about it. And then I don't think they really allowed people back there, so there weren't too many like people hovering over your shoulder during the games, kind of like breathing over your shoulder while you're trying to make plays. So it was really nice, really comfortable, really, really good job by the admins.
Okay, cool. So there's no real crowd feel to it until you kind of walk out of that area, and then, I mean, they're seeing it in real time, right? They just, you just don't want people to yell out like what to play and things like that, right?
Well, I think they're seeing it on real time if they're watching behind us.
Yeah.
And if you walk out of like your little area, there's the people doing like the side events, and they're at the other stations and computers. And the way they set up the stream camera, it was at the very front of the store. So if you like walked in, you could see the person. You can see the whole backdrop
and
the person
cool.
playing. So that was separate from where we were playing at. But we also had a game where two of our players were playing against each other, Amnesiac and Frozen, and they had to set up a separate backdrop because we were both at the same venue.
That's really that's pretty nice when you've got, you know, two of the guys going into the top eight
this
or
is
top
good.
Four. Yeah. So was that last minute, or were they already semi-prepared? I mean, given that lineup, I think I would have semi-prepared for it. Since they're
I think they were prepared for it, and they just kind of, they didn't have it set up day one because they didn't need it. So it was really day two when they had finalized that, like, these two players are playing against each other, that they started to set it up. And I know the venue is open 24 hours, 24/7.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure when they did it, but I'm sure they woke up that morning and then put everything together for the backdrop.
Okay. Well, that's definitely great. It sounds like the, you know, at least the admining and everything was really, really good at the Virginia site. And I think overall the production and adminning of this week, this past weekend, was tenfold better than the previous weekend. Because, you know, of course, you can look on Reddit on Monday and there's nothing to do with, you know, restarts and all these crazy things. So I think generally a huge improvement from that standpoint. And I guess we should expect the same thing. You know, it's just from the standpoint of Asia this coming weekend. So the tournament itself, how was Swiss? Was that a... Did you like Swiss? Like them changing?
I enjoyed the Swiss. Yeah. I enjoyed the Swiss more than the double of them. I still don't think it's perfect yet. I still think they can make steps to improvement. But overall, I enjoyed the Swiss. A lot of card. I come from other card games, so I was used to the Swiss format. And I would play in events where there were 9 rounds of Swiss the first day, 2 rounds of Swiss, and then we would cut to like a top 32 or 64 single OM, based on the like population of the tournament. So I thought the Swiss was a good step in the right direction. I still think they can make more steps though.
Oh, like what? Like just more rounds or like?
Maybe on top of more rounds, like maybe, I think the single OM in top 8 is really stressful. Yeah. That is, because someone can go 7-0. I almost went 7-0. And to think that I could have just lost one game and not have gotten the trip after doing really well.
One of the things that a lot of the events that do Swiss, oftentimes what they do is based on your Swiss position will seed you further in the bracket, right? So you're guaranteed like a top 2 or top 4 depending on how well you did in the Swiss. And that's been a solution that's offered, but it also feels a bit cheap because, you know, you can have a few people at 7-0 at the top and they can't all be, you know, in the top 4 or in the top 2. So that also causes an issue where, yeah, like very good players end up, like someone in the whole thing gets shafted.
Yeah, I can see that. And it's something that I think the Rat brought up too. It just feels bad when you've done so well in Swiss and it just doesn't pull out. I think Doc Pwn was actually 9-0 or something like that, right? And yeah, at some point,
undefeated to a final.
Oh, yeah, he was undefeated until the very end.
And then you ended up beating him. So that probably felt kind of weird for him too.
Yeah, I still don't know why they don't seed people based on their performance in Swiss, at least that like as a default option. I feel like that would have been what I gravitate towards as an organizer of an event. Just, you know, if I have to pick a format that seems fair to the players, because like worst case scenario, it comes down to a head to head. And if you have to do more matches afterwards to like solve the head to head, then at least you can do that.
Yeah.
Whereas it's really impossible to just seed people in a fair manner if they're all put at the bottom of a single elim bracket.
Yeah. I hear you. All right, well, why don't we talk a little bit about the decks that you brought? Let me bring these up real quick. And it'll be kind of hard to see here. Oops. Oh, I'm getting ahead of myself.
Spoiler.
Yeah, exactly.
You're so far ahead of yourself, dude. Mechator. I can't even hear you anymore.
Here we go. Okay, so I wonder if we should look at it this way or should I just bring it up in the browser? I think this is probably a little bit better. Okay, so anyway, you brought Rogue, you brought Shaman, Warlock, Warrior. Did you even get a chance to play the Shaman like all weekend long?
I did. Shaman.
Okay.
Played the Shaman first round. I played the Shaman last round, and I played the Shaman in top 8. So I played it at least 3 times I remember.
Yeah, so some people were trying to strategize more around the Shaman than actually banning it. That's kind of cool. Interesting.
Yeah, that was definitely a strategy some players were bringing.
Some players, you know, obviously think that you always ban Shaman, right? So definitely good to see that or at least some players were able to allow it to go through. Because, you know, it's one of those things where it's like a ladder where like all complain about Shaman. It's like, I don't want to see Shaman anymore. But then you have these events where you just don't see Shaman anymore. And then you get to the point where it's like, you know, I'd like to see like one. You know, it'd be nice if just one person allowed it.
I don't think everyone has that sentiment.
Maybe I'm just the only one. But so that was pretty interesting. So you brought, from the standpoint of like different types of decks, it looks like your Rogue is the aggro Rogue, which, is definitely starting to pick up steam, I think, generally in the meta. So why don't you talk a little bit about that? Because it did pretty well for you.
Yeah, the aggro Rogue went really well. It was one of my decks I was least comfortable with through the decks, because the other ones I've played a lot, and that one is the one I've played the least. But I really enjoyed the deck. I really liked the deck. My thought process behind bringing it was that I figured that a lot of people were going to be bringing full aggro lineups, because that's how typically NA works. And if I'm bringing Miracle Rogue, that just leaves me as a target to get swept by the aggro lineups. And I didn't want to have that option. And I also thought Rogue was really good against Pirate Warrior, which I thought was going to be one of the most broad decks. And the Rogue did really well against Pirate Warrior, but like even besides having the tech cards that it did. And so I really stand behind that Rogue, and like it was a really good choice to bring.
It's just good to see Shadow Step again. Noxious. Yeah. Isn't it nice, man?
I mean, I'll say something about Aggro Rogue. Like, I feel like Miracle Rogue for a while now has basically become, like, it was Aggro Rogue. It just refused to embrace it. It was just like, I don't really want to, you know, become another aggro deck. But then the more you played the deck, the more you realize, well, when does fucking Gadgetzan do anything for me anymore? Never. Yeah. Like, I'll just, it's
sure.
Let's just play Squires. Let's just go all in and shove damage to the face. And once you actually embrace the fact that you have the patches package in the deck and you just go face, it turns out you win more often. It's a lot more consistent.
So,
there are a few matches where, you know, the Gadgetzan, you miss it. You're like, okay, I wish this Gadgetzan were here right now. It would save me. But when you've got Shaku and Zeriel, you know, those act as proxy card draw. Azure Drake draws you cards, so you still have a decent amount of card draw in the deck. Like, it's not completely gone. And I've even seen some people say, you know, Tomb Pillager could be cut out of this deck and you would still have a functional deck. And it's right, because you don't need it as much as in other decks, which I've also found very interesting.
I mean, it's still extremely good. But
right,
yeah.
But Miracle Rogue is such a, like, it's so predicated upon the Tomb Pillager right now, where if you cut out Tomb Pillager, Miracle Rogue dies off. And when the rotation coming up, Gadgetzan Auctioneer is going to be around. Tomb Pillager is gone, but suddenly, you know, Aggro Rogue still sticks around, probably. Like, there's a very good chance that that deck doesn't, you know, it doesn't get affected as much by the rotation.
Yeah, there's a good chance that there'll be a new 4-drop, too, that they can throw in there, whether it's neutral or it's Rogue-specific.
And there's always Barnes.
Yeah, there's... Oh, Barnes, okay.
As a 4-drop. Because Barnes was played in this originally, I think. There's you originally played... You didn't play Beneath the Grounds. You'd play, like... I think one of Muzzy's first lists played Barnes and South Sea Captain. And so it was just... Okay. Barnes is just always a solid 4-drop, I think. Because if you hit anything high-rolling, it's just insane. But if you don't, it's just... decent body.
It's still a Yeti spread amongst two bodies.
Exactly.
So it's like zero risk. It's only upside, right? But you mentioned Beneath the Grounds. All right, how about that? How about Beneath the Grounds actually being a viable card in a specific, whether it's just event only, maybe not ladder, but let's just say event for now, event meta. That is awesome. You know, everybody's been trying all kinds of things with Beneath the Ground for years now, and or at least a year now. And how cool is it that this is actually a way to break a powerful archetype right now?
I love it. I like the fact that it adds an aspect of counterplay, because what I like about it is if you put it in your deck and you do play those Reno decks, it is really rewarding. But if you put it in your deck and you play against, like, the Pirate Warriors, like, it's just a dead card. There are very few times you'll ever want that in your hand against an aggro deck. So it really rewards players for making specific choices. So me putting it in my deck actually rewarded me a lot, because it won me at least 2 or 3 games against Reno decks that could not physically Reno or Kazakus because of that card.
And it's amazing how bad they are when they can't Reno or Kazakus. Oh. It's
tempo out of 4 mana 3/3.
I know.
And the worst part is, like, on ladder, oftentimes they forget you've shuffled Beneath the Ground, so they still go
they
for
still
it.
Play
like,
it.
On ladder, they actually forget about it. Yeah.
I've had that happen to me. Actually, where I'm like, oh, it wasn't yellow. Shit. That's terrible. That's really, really cool. Let's see. Let's talk about your Reno lock. So your Reno lock is, I think, one of the most interesting things that we saw this weekend. First off, there's no Jiraxxus. And the other thing that really stands out is that there's a Curse of Rafam, which did make some difference this weekend in some cases. So why don't you talk a little bit about that?
So this is Shatan and Dachi's list. I really liked his list, and I wanted to bring it for prelims because I thought Reno Mage was going to be really popular. Typically, this lineup is built that you play Tempo Mage instead of the Reno Lock, but I wasn't convinced Tempo Mage was a good deck in my playtesting, and I didn't like playing it. I didn't feel comfortable with it. I felt like it could just draw more dead than any of my other decks, so I wanted to replace it with something I felt more consistent, and that's where the Reno Lock comes into play, and I wanted this Reno Lock to really beat Reno Mage. I felt like Reno Mage was going to be a really populated deck in the tournament, and so I was like, what better to do it than the man who basically built his whole lineup to beat Reno Mage. And it really worked out well, the tech cards. One thing for leaving Draxxus out was the fact that Draxxus is a really it's really punishing and rewarding if played in optimal situations. But I was worried that a lot of like the burn versions of Reno Mage and people trying to beat Reno Lock Mirrors, it would like just fall dead. And I feel like I could have replaced it with, like, for instance, the Ragnaros that does a similar thing. It just burns my opponent. It also never gave me like that hard, difficult choice of like, is Draxxus correct here? When I'm playing like Rag, I will always know like Rag is correct here. Mm-hmm. So I never needed Draxxus. I never felt like I needed it. So I'm really glad I didn't have it in the list. That was one of the cards I was actually debating putting in over Undachi's list. And I'm really glad I didn't. And Curse of Rafam, just I burned a lot of cards, and then it actually won me a game against Tempo Mage, which was really insane.
That's so cool, man. Curse of Rafam. I mean, that's the beauty of the, and kind of what I was expecting from these HTT prelims, from just talking to other players, that they were saying that there's going to be some new stuff that kind of jumps in here or that we haven't really seen. And so Curse of Rafam is definitely something we haven't seen. What's the last time you've seen Curse of Rafam, Noxious?
I mean, I'll say one thing about like the Reno decks, right? I recently had a video I made about the idea of, you know, creativity and deck building and how it'd be awesome to have card combos being more dominant than just, hey, here's this amazing tempo tool. And Curse of Rafam is one of those cards that actually has tremendous potential. It's just there are no real decks in which you want to play, say, two copies of it. Like, there's no good fit ever. But in a deck like a Reno deck, you can find room for those really weird cards that, hey, maybe this works right now. Maybe it wouldn't work in the next meta. Maybe it doesn't work as a two of. But because I'm a Reno deck, I don't have to that restriction. I don't have to look at all the cards and say, oh, I need two of this. I can just sprinkle in a tech. And Reno does that very well. And I'm really, you know, happy to see that. You know, Beneath the Ground is coming up as an answer to Reno. I'm happy to see that Ice Block is being met with Curse of Rafam. I'm just happy to see that people are finally teching with really off the beaten path solutions to decks.
Yeah, I mean, there are tools that are available in our sets to counter very specific things, and people tend to lose sight of that at times. I mean, I think a lot of the good players try them out, but generally speaking, I think people lose sight of it and don't, you know, they just want to play the generally high, very consistent and, you know, very high win percentage decks, and because they're just so trained through ladder. But what's cool about events is that, you know, there's this element of strategy that allows for you guys to actually tech in things like Frost Elemental, you know, and Curse
of Rafam. Yeah, which is great.
And,
I kind of like it.
Yeah, it's like, it's so cool that you guys get a chance to do that. And Curse of Rafam is a really neat card. And like you said, it's only because of Reno and that you can always just heal all the way, or you just have removal for days, like in a class like Warlock, that you're able to do that. But it's a very, it's like a finesse card, you know what I mean? Because it makes your opponent decide, okay, do I want to give up tempo and use this card, or do I just take health?
And so here's the thing I like about those cards, right? That's going to be my last point about this, is they create decision-making.
Right.
And
exactly.
One of the things Hearthstone lacks in many games, not every single one, is just, you know, decisions don't branch out enough, you know, especially like your Summer Foam against aggro is still irrelevant. You're looking at it like, oh, well, it wasn't my Doomsayer, I guess I'm dead. So like the decision making only matters insofar as you've got time to make those decisions. Mm-hmm. And I think that card, like in the Reno Mage to Warlock Mirror, is a legit tech. And I think it's cool to,
yeah,
it took a while for it to come up, kind of like the Frost Elemental up against the weapon classes.
Yeah. But yeah, Curse of Rafam and Dirty Rad too. Dirty Rad did some work too this weekend.
I love those two cards. I love those two cards because, like Noxious was saying, they add this element of decision making, and they also add counterplay. And I just love that aspect of those cards. That like you play the game differently when you know your opponent has it, and you play that you playing with the card, you play differently. For instance, like maybe I'll use this Curse of Rafam to burn a card, and hopefully I burn this card rather than using it to proc the Ice Block. Like, it just gives decision making. That's really something important that I feel like all card games should have more of.
And the strategic aspect of bringing that card to, you know, an event like this, even though the deck lists are public, you know, there's a lot of people that don't react well to situations they haven't been in. You know, like they're more of a practiced type of player than they are just a reactive, you know, improvisational, that type of player. And when Curse of Rafam, Curse of Rafam is one of those cards where you have to do the math. Like, you have to figure out, okay, how much health can I actually take from this? And, like, what does the give take on tempo and what that means to me? And if you haven't done that math, it can really put you in a situation where you can make the incorrect play. So that's really, really cool too. That's an aspect I think is sometimes, you know, underrated. The rest of the decks, I mean, anything else you want to point out? Like you obviously went with a very aggressive themed lineup with your Renal Lock kind of anchoring the more of a control, or figuring out a way to even beat the mirror actually with that. Any comments you have just with what you
No other comments. I do stand by putting the Reno Lock in over the Tempo Mage, because my thought process was, if I'll be I can beat mirrors, I can win like the Rogue versus Pyro Warrior. Like a lot of sets I would go up 2-0 and I would just anchor on the Reno Lock and say this deck will get a win against something. Mm-hmm. Like if this deck just draws well and draws like its one offs. Or it just Reno Lock is just, it's a powerful deck. It can get a win against anything. And I felt like Tempo Mage just might just fall short. So that was like my only comment on this lineup. I really like the lineup. I like the aggro playstyle, but I also like control playstyle. So yeah.
Okay. Well, worked out well for you. And I want to give a quick congratulations too for the other three that are going to be making it to Bahamas: Docpone, Frozen, and Teray. Gosh, Teray he seems to always just be around, man. It's like, you don't talk about that guy, and then all of a sudden he just pops up in the, you know, whether it's like the last few rounds of a prelim or even just like the seasonal champions. So yeah, I mean, that guy's just seems to always be there. So the Bahamas, you excited about it? You ever been to the Bahamas?
I have been in the area. I can't remember. I was really young when it happened, but so not that I remember, not that I can like remember like anytime recently, but I am super excited. I've needed a vacation for a while. So
yeah, that's the
I'm really pumped.
Yeah. Bring your bathing suit, man. The beaches are really, really nice there. Actually fishing. If you're a fisherman or you like going fishing, there's some great fishing over in the Bahamas.
That seems like awfully specific. How much fishing have you done in the Bahamas, Chandler? Well,
I mean, I was just there in August actually. Like my wife's cousin has a boat, so we
seems good.
We've done. I mean, I'm not much of a fisherman, but he is. He's a freaking crazy fisherman. So we went out there and just on his boat for a while, and it's great. It's awesome, and the fish is there. I'll have to tell you one place to eat at, and you're probably gonna like laugh your ass off. But eat at the Poop Deck. It's literally called the Poop Deck.
The Poop Deck.
It's literally called the Poop Deck.
I am.
It's got great fish, dude. The snapper and the fish. Like, it's so good. Yes. It's eat at the Poop Deck.
I'm a huge fan of seafood, so I'll look into the Poop Deck.
The Poop Deck.
Are you telling him to eat a snapper at the Poop Deck?
Yeah, it's sanitary. I promise you. I promise it's sanitary. Yeah,
I'm gonna stay out of that one. Have fun, doctor. Report to me when you're septic.
I'll let you know how the Poop Deck food was.
Exactly. Okay, well, why don't we move on and talk about the developers Q&A, the live one that we had yesterday, and it was Ben Brode and Mike Dene, and it lasted for about 45 minutes to an hour. Covered a lot of different things. I even got in a question in there, which was kind of cool too. But wanted to get your thoughts on it. We'll probably do a quick summary of a lot of things. Actually, why don't I just start with a summary, and then we'll just kind of talk about each thing. So the first thing they talked about was really the Hall of Fame. You know, just kind of explaining that, you know, the six cards that they took were necessarily overpowered. They just wanted to they thought they should rotate out just to keep things fresh, which I agree with that. I think we talked about this like on Thursday, which is like, yeah, these cards have been around for a while and it's always good to have some kind of rotation, right? But our concern was that it just happened to all be control-based or combo-based decks, which is kind of a bummer. The other thing they were talking about too is just kind of Molten Giants, you know, being unnerfed and rotated. They're thinking about that. And future rotations will happen. But just for clarification, future rotations will happen, but they won't happen this year. They're going to happen like next year. You know, like,
yeah,
I think this
it's gonna take another full 365 days before we see something else.
And then I think he talked about rotating cards might be replaced. I think somebody asked the question of whether there will be classic cards added, you know, given that we had Icelands removed and we had, you know, Power Overwhelming removed. So didn't really address that directly. I don't know. Like, they just said, like, you know, maybe, but, you know, I guess your classic Blizzard answer there. But they, it sounded like they were leaning towards not doing that, which I don't know. I figure you would try to keep things fair. I don't know if the classic cards for each class is exactly the same in total, but I would think
in terms of power level, no, that's for sure.
Well, not power level, but even just like volume, just the number, quantity of cards.
Oh yeah, they definitely did that. Yeah,
okay.
Classic, basics, everything's been mapped to be the same amount per class, as far as I remember.
So when every they single have to set,
there's one. Actually, it's probably limiting design in some weird way, to be honest, because it's like I want to make two epics for Warlocks, I can't. So I have to make one rare, which is why we have cards where we're just like, this should be an epic or this should be a rare. And they're just, they had to categorize it that way because they already had the slot filled in, you know, when expansions come around.
Right.
So that's definitely one of the things that comes up.
So if they do that, then they, don't they have to replace Icelands and Power Overwhelming to some degree?
I don't think so. I don't think they have to.
Because then they throw off the balance.
I mean, they're probably going to be going away. If they're moving them to wild, they're probably not going to stick around.
Oh, they're still in wild. They're not... That's true. Yeah, I guess.
They still exist.
I keep thinking
right?
in terms of they're just gone. Yeah, they're not. They're not gone.
So if they're moved to wild, then they're not going to be in the arena, right? True. Like, that's the thing. They're just going to disappear since they're not the. Because I mean, like, if they're allowing themselves to go, let's reduce the rate at which certain cards appear in arena manually. Let's delete Purify. Let's delete Snowchugger. You know, all that stuff. If they're allowing themselves to do that, then, you know, nothing's stopping them from removing PO and Icelands. You know, it's just an extra step.
So they also mentioned, they also started talking about wild a bit. Yeah, there were some questions about wild and just because the rotation goes to wild and balancing wild and all this stuff. They made it sound like that they are balancing for wild. And my general impression was that they were encouraging us to play wild in a competitive fashion, and that kind of surprised me. I mean, generally speaking, I've always been more optimistic about wild, but I don't know, hearing that, it made me feel like, or a little bit surprised, because I think they would be a bit concerned about wild, given that I'd be really surprised if they spend as much time balancing wild as they do standard.
I don't think they want to balance wild. I think they want people to play wild because.
No, but that's dangerous, right? If you want.
I don't think it is. I think. I mean, it's like some of the degenerate formats in Magic. Like, you know, sometimes, like in Magic, the older the format, I mean, maybe I'm exaggerating, but the more absurd the starting hands are, right? And like how much they matter, rather, like the weight behind the value of a starting hand in Magic and like Legacy and the value of your starting hand in Standard is very different. You can have like an average starting hand in Standard and be okay. Yeah, an average standing hand in Legacy, you're probably screwed because the guy in front of you is going to dump your face off in two turns. So like Wild could become that format where things that happen are just completely degenerate. And if that's the case, like, I don't mind it. I want Hearthstone to have a game mode like that where it's using constructed tools from many, many sets and doing degenerate things. I want to see somebody go Warsong Commander Dreadsteed. You know what I mean? Like, I want these kinds of completely broken interactions existing in a certain space. As long as, you know, tournaments aren't determined by, you know, coin flip, then it's great. But we'll have to see what they end up doing. Because, like, with Reno rotating, for instance, Wild suddenly has Reno. And we don't have it in Standard. And that's a deck, like, the Highlander deck might only exist in tournament settings in Wild in the future. Like right now, it doesn't feel that way because Wild is garbage. There's nothing there. There's not much. But as soon as the rotation hits, and then the next one is going to be absolutely insane.
Yeah. Dr. J, what do you think?
I'm not a huge fan of Wild. I don't really play Wild, but I enjoy Wild for the fact that it's a nostalgia trip. So I think there always should be that aspect there because some players like those interactions and they like the card pool that is bigger, and I think with time it will get better. With time you add more sets to it. Like right now no one's playing Wild because there's only two Wild sets, and that's not enough to really make it wild. And I think with time it'll get better. I think giving it something competitive is good. So I'm not a huge fan of this Tavern Brawl that they're, or Heroic Tavern Brawl that they're suggesting with Wild, but I think I think in order to get people to play it, it's a step in the right direction, because a lot of people are competitive and they want a competitive aspect to the game. So trying to make WoW more competitive is, I may not do it, but I know players out there definitely will love it and definitely will enjoy it. And I think WoW is a good game mode. I think there should be that format where, like Noxious was saying, you get the Dreadsteed and the Warsong Commander, and insane stuff happens. Because yeah. I know other card games have those formats as well.
Yeah, I mean, I it's not that I don't like Wild. I mean, I actually, in theory, do really like Wild, even conceptually, even as a competitive format. It's one of those things where if they're not supporting it adequately and you're telling people to play it, then you're going to have people start complaining about the balance of Wild. Yeah. I mean, there's no question there's balance issues in Wild. We would be super lucky. Like, they would be super, super lucky if there was no balance issues in Wild when they didn't do anything. So, I mean, we've seen what they're doing. I mean, we've seen how much time they spend even just on Standard. It just makes me, unless we just don't know how much time that they're spending actually on Wild too, it just makes me feel like, oh my gosh, you're just like, you're just actually you're building up this crazy hidden, you know, just molehill or whatever that's going to just like fall, just completely collapse on you, and you're going to be like, oh my gosh, we shouldn't have gotten so many people to play Wild until we were ready for that. So yeah, with this leaderboard, that's going to get people to play. I think in general, getting people to play, they've done a good job. It's just, I hope they're ready for it. That's gonna.
Yeah, I mean, is to me the place where, like, I actually prefer, conceptually, like on paper, I prefer Wild to Standard. The issue is that right now the Standard cards are plaguing Wild. They've actually changed. They've turned Wild into a Pirate Fest and Reno Fest. Like, there's nothing else there. Like, even the Belcher Death Rattle decks are garbage. Like, that's my point. Like, those don't do anything. You can't play Nazoth. It's bad. Like, how insane is that? Because Kazakus is good. You know, like, they'll just nullify. So, like, I don't know how much they plan to balance for a while, but, you know, there are definitely some new cards that come out that make the whole of old Wild cards just irrelevant. Like, what's Belcher against a Jade Golem? Nothing. You know, like, they need to kill you somehow quickly. And that's why they're allowing combo cards like Icelands, like PO, to go there. Because that way you can fight off against the Jades by doing something degenerate yourself, which I think is perfectly fair.
Yeah. I can see that. Okay, so the next thing I talked about was just expansions and just the general frequency of it. And so I think Dog asked the question of whether they felt that the frequency was enough, you know, just whether just increasing one of the expansions to 130 from an adventure was enough. And they basically said that, you know, they are satisfied with it, and they were just kind of wanting to wait and see after this year whether it was enough or not. So Dr. J, what do you think about that?
I actually like it. I think it's a step in the right direction. I think what Blizzard's doing is they're doing a lot of trial and error. They're doing a lot of, let's see if this works. If it doesn't, we'll keep switching it up, which is actually a step in the right direction for Blizzard. I think it's a good thing that they're doing. I enjoy the three expansions because I came from like Yu-Gi-Oh! And Yu-Gi-Oh! It was a card pack each 3 months, I think it was. And they also did like little trickle-in expansions in between. And making it to where we don't get that Karazhan expansion where it's just 30 cards and only two of them are like, or not two, but like 10 of them see play, is going to mean that more decks get created and then that we explore more. And I really enjoy this three expansions. And then I like that they're keeping the adventure for people who are PvE enjoyers, because I know everyone plays this game for a different reason.
Yeah.
And so I'm glad Blizzard's trying to appeal to everyone. Sometimes it's hard, so I understand what they're going through.
Yeah, I think with the adventure or the single player modes too, that you're going to sprinkle in some packs too. Some of the details with the single player they also added was that there won't be heroics. There, you know, they'll just be, I think, just straight up levels.
I think the straight up adventure. Yeah.
But they're going to be gauntlet. Harder. They're going to be harder though.
Straight up gauntlet.
Yeah.
Because they're optional, right? So because they're optional, they can actually make them like a lot more difficult, which I think is an amazing way to design it, right? Like the problem with heroic is it was meant to be there as a thing for people who really, really like it to do, but it turned out to not be that compelling even for those who really, really like it.
Well, the thing about heroic, the issue for me was that I felt like those bosses were designed for the, what do you call it, easy mode, and then Heroic was just like doubling the health. You know, like it wasn't designed.
Yeah, it wasn't
hard.
Designed yeah. properly. Yeah, it was so. Just like number increases in a right. non-interesting fashion for right. the most part. Mm-hmm. For the most part. Not for everything, but yeah, in many ways it was.
The latter end, I felt like it was. Maybe the very first, like next round.
Yeah. So, like, I also want to point out one other thing about Wild. You know, if they're supporting the format, is as far as revenue goes, this could be an endless, like, an endless rabbit hole in a nutshell. Because, like, people may be curious as to what's going on in Wild. They might hear about it. They might be told, hey, dude, go play Mech Mage. That deck is fucking amazing to play. And it's true. It's amazing. But, you know, like, you can't play it right now. So people will be tempted to go back and craft those old cards. Maybe they're going to release what they could term Wild Packs, where you can open cards from Naxxramas and GVG and just get access to those cards and, you know, purchasable bundles. And that's an increased revenue stream, because right now nobody cares about Wild as much. And if they don't support it, those cards don't generate any more revenue. Thus, they'd have no reason to put any balance time into it. So it's like a self-feeding process. So by supporting it, they have an incentive to make yeah. it better.
No, I agree with that too. And they even hinted at making old adventures available again, you know, right? So if people can get some of those old cards again, which, you know, it was purely, I think, a UI issue that they started discontinuing some of them. So that'd be nice. That'll definitely be good for the folks to continue to get some of the old cards. And I think you're right too. I think it'll just open up another revenue channel, or at least a longer sustaining regular channel, revenue channel for them. See, another thing they talked about with expansions is they mentioned the PTR, which I think was really interesting. This is one thing that Ben, you know, talked about, why we don't have a PTR, you know, in terms of testing out like a lot of these new cards and whatnot. And it made a lot of sense. He basically said, we don't have a PTR because, like, the meta would be established even before the expansion
yeah,
comes out.
Yeah,
it's
sure.
like, yeah, that totally makes sense. So, but he did mention that they're considering a PTR for balance changes, though. And I think that would be smart, getting us the ability to play with them, give you some feedback on it. That would be definitely great. Let's see, another thing. Let's see, ladder improvements. Okay, so one of the things that he talked about with just the general distribution of players, and this kind of leads to the whole new player experience and things like that, is that 40% of the players are actually at rank 20.
Yep.
So if you're at rank 12, you're actually one of the best Hearthstone players, you know, just from a Ooh. General standpoint, which is
damn,
so really serious. Yeah. I mean, that probably puts you in like the 10% range, I bet, or something like that. So 40% at rank 20. And, you know, we all know that the matchmaking is purely based on the star system. It's not even based on an MMR at that point. You know, this points to a huge problem in my eyes, and they, you know, they've acknowledged that there is a problem, but they didn't really say too much in addition to that. So what do you guys think of that? 40% of the players rank 20.
Well, it's going to get a lot. So, like, one of the things that ranks 20 do is they don't downrank. Right?
Right,
that's a pretty big deal, and it's a pretty big deal for a very specific reason. They feed stars into the system, and now we're gonna have more rank 20s, because rank 5, rank 15, and rank 10 will behave as a rank 20 in terms of the star economy, right? Mm-hmm. And it'll blow it up, of course, the higher rank. So if that's an issue they're worried about, it's gonna keep coming up. One of the other things that it indicates for the player base is just how little the quote-unquote competitive scene matters in terms of balance. And I think that's what's important to understand is, not necessarily balance, because it matters more to the competitive scene to balance, but what they like when it comes to card design, what they need is stuff that people at rank 20 will go, oh, I want this. Because if they were designing for a 40% portion of their player base, which they can't really neglect, because, you know, it means these guys are probably buying packs, and that's a part of their business model, is, you know, catering to player bases, whether we're talking about introduction to adventures through, you know, big expansions where they can play PvE if they feel like it. You know, most of these players play against AI. They play against expert AI all the time. They play in casual. They play maybe arena with, you know, they feel like a tavern brawl. But ranked, that's kind of, you know, niche, I'd say.
Yeah.
I think so too. I you make some good points there. You know, all of us assuming that standard ladder is the default play is, you know, it's not the case. And one thing that for me, it points out, you know, just accentuates the, you know, we've talked about this a little bit too, is that, you know, the ladder system not only is it just not right, you know, on the higher end of things, it's even more wrong at the bottom end of things. And, you know, we always talk about the new player experience, but we haven't stressed enough, guys, that the bottom of the ladder just needs to be extended by a lot. You know, like, what's the difference between rank 25 and rank 20? It's like 10 stars or something like that. It's like 12 stars.
Yeah.
And that's ridiculous to have only like that little, I mean, that range being so small between, you know, different types of players, people that literally just get in, just playing the innkeeper, and people that have been played, they've been playing a while, you know, and these people are all at rank 20 right now. So, you know, we need to extend the ladder by a lot. I mean, I think it needs to go all the way out to 50, maybe even more, to be honest. And if we were to do that, then the new player experience would be great. Like, I mean, that'd be great, but it would be better where they can actually match make a lot better, even if they want to use a star system to match make and not an MMR. You can at least put people that have the same cards together, and then they can actually have a great Hearthstone experience that is nothing like mine, you know, nothing like yours, yet they're still having a great competitive experience. And they can kind of, you know, progress with buying cards, and free-to-play players are able to do that. Right now, it's awful. And there's no other way to put it.
That's what the floors will help with. Right.
But the floors are higher, though.
They will help a lot in terms of not making lower players face off against better players, right? Because it basically forces the, you know, higher ranked players to stay up there. They won't be able to just go down and fight the noobs, to put it that way. And that's.
But it doesn't go far enough, though.
It still helps a lot. It definitely will help a ton, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's definitely still in the right direction.
It helps. No problem. Yeah, no question. Yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Dr. J, you're saying something?
Oh, I was just saying it was definitely a step in the right direction. I'm not sure exactly what they need to do to fix the ladder system, but the ladder system right now really is meh. I can't stand it. It's like the I've never been in the early ranks, but it's kind of crazy to see these numbers that, like, as a competitive player, I don't really think about. Like, when I see players, I'm assuming, okay, they're either near my level or above my level or a little bit below my level. I don't think they're literally majority of this game is just either playing on their phone or playing against AI or playing in the arena just for fun. It's really kind of crazy to look at these facts. Cause I mean, we can even admit, like, I can admit the facts are true and they are, but I don't physically see it in my habitat or my ecosystem.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the other players do. And I don't know how that ecosystem is cause I'm not typically in it. So I don't know exactly what it feels like.
Yeah. I mean, even looking at, I mean, obviously none of us are, like, none of us are really in that ecosystem, but I mean, just look at how bronze and silver and gold work just in all the other games, right? And platinum, and it goes all the way up. I don't feel like there is a bronze and silver. It's just kind of all mixed
together.
Yeah,
it's all mixed up. There's no distinction between rank 10 and like rank 5 at this point, even.
I'm not even talking about rank 10. I'm talking about there's no real distinction between rank 20 and rank, you know, 16 or whatever. You know, even,
yeah, there's none.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's, there should be, though. There are like a huge variety. There's people that are actually good at Hearthstone that just don't have cards that are at, you know, rank 20 or 18 or 19, mixed with people who are bad at Hearthstone, but they have cards, you know? And I think that's recipe for just frustrations, and it doesn't
feel
right.
Yeah, frustration is the right word, I think.
Yeah.
Like that, you're nailing it on the head.
Yeah.
That's the emotion, I think, that players who run up against overpowered tools feel.
Yeah.
But you also need to keep in mind one thing is that frustration is a game design tool, in a way, because it makes you want to get better, right? Like, it's like that moment when you fail at a level in Mario. Like, you just need to bang your head against the wall until you finally nail it.
I can really.
I know what you mean.
That is a very true statement, because I at one point in my career trying to play Hearthstone, I got really frustrated. I was like, I keep losing. I don't have like all the cards, but, you know, I need to step it up. I need to not only get better, but get these cards and make sure I'm playing with the highest level people. And so frustration is really,
Noxious
hit on a good point.
I think, you know, this whole being engaged is a psychological game, right? So I think that, once we're to our stage where we're in that competitive mode, we want to get better. Absolutely. Like, I think it's good for them, a revenue generator. But when we're talking about new players, I mean, players that have played their first 20, 30 games, like, we don't want them to be frustrated in the first.
No, we don't want
if
them
I were
to
Blizzard, I would not want them to be frustrated in the first 20, 30 games.
Well, they're still having fun, though. That's the thing. Like, most people who start playing this game, right, they don't know what the quote-unquote meta is. When they see a dude dropping pirates, they're like, Jesus Christ, this is amazing. Yes, I die, but I'm a new player. This guy had cool cars. That's fun. Sure, after 30 games of Pirates, it gets really fucking old because you think to yourself that's all there is. But like, if there's a good mix of decks and you lose to every single one of them, you realize that, you know, yes, you just don't have the right tools. And that's, for mobile games, that's very standard. It's like going Clash Royale and expecting to climb to the top because you've just started. Like, it's just not a thing. And I think that's when, you know, the discrepancy between PC users and mobile users just shows itself full force. Mobile game players are a lot more accepting of power discrepancies that are based around factors they can't control. Whereas in PC games, you expect to be on an even playing field at all times, which isn't the way that mobile games are designed. So I'm not sure that the frustration levels of players really, you know, is as high as we think it is with the background that we have. But I mean, certainly there is frustration, but I don't think it's as bad as we perceive it.
Yeah. Okay, so moving on, other cards that they, I guess, considered nerfing and rotating, because, you know, they were asking whether there were, how they decided to nerf Small Time Buccaneer and Spirit Claws. So some things that came up were Auctioneer was really close to being rotated to Hall of Fame. It was on the list, and it looked like it got cut on the very last cut.
Yeah, so,
And we talked about a little bit about that, right? I mentioned that at least they didn't cut it. So I don't know. I think that was interesting. It's good that they were looking at both, you know, Auctioneer and Conceal. Sounds like maybe it was mutually exclusive, actually nerf or sending Conceal to Hall of Fame influenced the Auctioneer keep, I believe.
Yeah.
So
definitely did, yeah. They actually tried to figure out whether Auctioneer was overpowered or if it was just a rogue thing with Conceal.
Yeah. So they're willing to wait another year for Auctioneer, but that's, you know, another card that I think is on the chopping block, and it should be. It's been around forever. So it's definitely in the list of cards that have been used since the beta and should for diversity's sake be potentially moved to the Hall of Fame. Let's see. Buffing poorly played cards. Yeah, so somebody asked whether they were thinking about just buffing cards, generally speaking. And, you know, they made the point that they'd prefer not buff classic cards just because it kind of throws off the balance. You know, these are cards are going to be around forever too. And they prefer not doing that. And they also said that just bad cards, they can make better, you know, by releasing cards.
Yeah.
And they gave example of Secret Paladin and things. And I think that's
smart.
Yeah, I think that is a way that they've been able to make up for the deficiencies. But, you know, I think there are some decisions that they could make with certain cards to make them a little bit better. What's your thoughts on that, Dr. J?
I'm fine without them buffing old cards. I don't think they necessarily need a buff. I think the biggest buff you can give to older cards is by printing a new card that works well with them. Because then, like they were saying, it keeps everything fresh. For instance, like Secret Paladin, they printed a card that made all of those, like, what we consider really bad secrets to be playable. And so I think the best way to, like, quote-unquote buff those cards is to print other cards that work well with them. And I really think that's a good way to do it. I don't think they necessarily need to step in and change or tweak any of these cards because I like the idea of, like, cards working together, and this card was never played until this card came out, and then this card became really good, and I think it's a really good aspect of the card design.
Noxious, what do you think?
I mean, I don't really mind them not touching stuff too much, frankly. Like, there's not much to say on the topic, I think. It's just, like, we've talked about it a lot, and I just have no preference one way or the other. Like, they've shown their preferences themselves, and at this point, all we can do is say, okay, let's see what they choose to design with. I'm kind of done trying to make Hearthstone fit a mold that I'd like it to, because obviously the devs have more information than I do at this rate, and I've just accepted that the game isn't the competitive title that maybe I thought it would become necessarily. Like, they've got more on their mind than just the esports scene.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I generally agree with that. Just both of your points there, where it's like it's good when they build cards to make up for deficiencies.
But it's also not something that they can always do, because at some point it becomes a matter of like they're trying to always plug a hole in a strategy, right? Like whether they buff or nerf or create a new card. Yeah, but the issue is at the end of the day, like whenever a new hole is fixed, then there's another one that crops up because somebody else has got a weakness of that strategy. So you're never done trying to fix the problem.
The point is, for me, it's always been, the point is like you have to create, the classic set and the basic set are supposed to be foundations, you know, like identity foundations, even just foundations to build upon with the expansion cards. Not the opposite, where the expansion cards are literally just Band-Aids the entire time. Band-Aids work, but over time, I mean, either you're going to get repetitive and redundant, like with the secrets, for instance, right? Like you're either just going to be printing, just making more mysterious challenger-like cards and things like that, which get unoriginal over time, or you know, you have to make some of these things actually better. And eventually, maybe they can do this for another year or two, but eventually, I think they need to consider adding stuff to Classic, or even just replacing some of the things that. See, Heroic for single player. Okay, we talked about that. Combo decks. So they talk about combo decks. That came up. I don't think there's anything new here. We know how they feel about it. They don't like OTK decks. They like 2-turn, 3-turn type of combo kills.
Yeah.
Can't say I agree with that, but I just...
I don't like... I'll say one thing. I hate 30-0 kills. I just don't... 30-0 just feels wrong. Because it means that the entire deck is filled with nothing but answers, which means the other guy's half of his deck is also useless. Because you don't present threats. So if his deck has answers, then it's a matter of who draws the combo first. There's nothing really compelling about it.
I think that's oversimplifying it though. And Dr. J, you can
like
speak
combo.
A
okay,
more.
Dude, combo Reno Lock versus combo Reno Lock. Like when I mean the matchup is super skill demanding when the combo is not involved, right? Like I think that's my thought on it. Maybe it's not true, but to me, without combo, Reno Lock is super skill demanding. And then sometimes you get the combo in, and it's just one of these things where it's like a decision less win condition. And in the mirror match, it cheapens the mirror match. And if every deck, if many decks are allowed to have that kind of gameplay, I don't know. I'm not a huge fan.
Well, Dr. J, what's your thoughts on that? I'll give my thoughts after you.
I come from a different card game. So the card game I came from, Yu-Gi-Oh, like turn games were over by turns 1 and 2, and they were like just OTK fest.
Oh my god!
Yeah,
it was really bad. I remember just playing the game. I'm like, you're dead this turn. Like, good game. But so I actually don't mind it as much. I don't mind the 0-30 aspect of gameplay, because that's just what I've been used to it for a while. And I think sometimes it adds an element of skill if you know that there's a specific way they play the game. You can start to play around it. For instance, like. Maybe combo lock isn't the greatest example, but for combo lock, you can you have this option of either tempoing out, say, a Sun Fury Protector to protect your 8/8, or you have the option of Argusing to protect your 8/8. But instead, you hold the Sun Fury and kind of like maybe sacrifice the 8/8 Mountain Giant in order to later on in the game when you Draxus and you have the 6/6s to really establish those taunt minions. That way, your opponent can't kill you with the combo. So I like that sometimes it can add interesting gameplay. And sometimes it can really make you think, like, is this card worth it here? Do I need to hold it for the end game? Macro decisions. But I will say that sometimes I can see where it's frustrating for players that if they don't want to play, like, for instance, Zulok versus Freeze Mage. It is a game of I will play my minions. You will try to answer my minions. If you answer my minions, you win. If you don't answer my minions, you lose. So I can see where people would be frustrated and not enjoy that gameplay experience because they really want to feel like they have a chance in the game.
Right, like the thing is, if you look at combo decks that seem rather fair to me, like I'll go with Avion Okun as like an unfair deck that takes so much to do that it's just like the win condition of Avion Okun is actually unfair. Like I'll be the first to admit it. That is the most unfair way and bullshit way to die. The thing is, at least it's not a 3-card combo or a 4-card. It's like here are these 10 pieces I need to put together to kill.
Right, it was
where,
like,
and it's a very different feeling than dying to. Like Reno Lock comboing me, because their deck just does good things and then they just sprinkle in 3 slots and they're like, all right, calling it a day, boy. And it's not compelling design to have cheap combos that take very little effort to put together. When you're talking to me about like a like a mage comboing a bunch of ice lances, I don't mind it as much. But because of the way Freeze Mage plays, it's frustrating for a lot of people. So I could see why they're. It's like if you give freeze effects to Avion Akun, would you give Druid freeze effects? Because then suddenly that bullshit deck becomes ridiculous.
Yeah, the thing about you hit the nail like on the head with just your point there. You know, for me, it's like it's not OTK generally. It's
okay.
The type of OTK decks, and Arena Lock is a good example of an OTK deck that you can get pretty darn early. You know, you can actually pull that off on turn 9 or turn 10, where with Freeze Mage, you know, something that actually makes you draw through your deck, or even something like Enraged Warrior, right? The whole Rampage crazy thing, you know, that way back when, you have to draw through the majority of your deck to actually get it. I don't mind those decks taking me from 0 to 30, because there are a lot of turns where you know what's going on. Like, once you've deciphered what's going on, you're playing a completely different way. And whether that means just dumping your cards as fast as you can, then that's fine too. But, you know, the whole game, Hearthstone is a lot to do with the unknown and preparing for uncertainty. That's like where the skill of Hearthstone is. That's where it's all so amazing. And that's one of the reasons why Hearthstone as an esport is held back too, is because it's up to the casters to really, you know, verbalize those things where, you know, we were not seeing it explicitly on the screen. And, you know, I think OTK is one of those things. It's just like, you can't see where some of the decisions are being made, especially with the mirror matchup. You know, some of the best matches we've ever seen in Hearthstone, like the Tyso Skaka Freeze Mage versus Freeze Mage battle. Remember that semifinal? That's like one of the best matches like we've ever had, like in Hearthstone. And there were so many crazy, awesome plays during that. And they weren't explicitly on the screen, you know, like there are like all these decisions being made.
But here's the thing, right? Like, this is the only reason it's awesome is because they need many pieces, as you said, right, to get the combo together. And, you know, on average, like sometimes Freeze Mage versus Freeze Mage is the worst thing ever, because one guy gets all the loot hoarders and the acolytes and the other guy gets jack shit. But the other times when they both get card draw, and it's really amazing to watch, because then it's a matter of it's a tug of war, really. And I like that type of combo gameplay, I don't mind as much. Like, I think that's fine, because usually it's more.
And Kuhn's that
compelling,
way too, like you said.
Right?
Yeah. I think Kuhn's good too. Yeah.
I understand like the discrepancy that Noxious is saying right here. There's a difference between having like two cards in your deck that can kill at this range rather than having seven cards in your deck that you need in your hand that can kill this range. For instance, like I guess like the biggest example is like Kun combo is to Freeze Mage as the Arena Lock currently is to Midrange Druid, because Midrange Druid would just kill you with Force of Nature Savage Roar.
Pretty much, yeah.
And the same, so Arena Lock would kill you with Leroy Faceless. So I definitely can agree with that. I understand that. I see now what you're saying, so yeah, I definitely agree with that. I don't like the whole Leroy Faceless, like, if I just have these two cards, good game, whereas with Freeze Mage and the Kun Druid, I really need these seven cards, and then I'm good to go.
So here's the thing, right? Like, let's look at the Leroy combo. What's prevented Paladins from doing Leroy Blessing of Might Faceless, right, with an Emperor play? It's just they don't have Life Tap. That's like the only reason it's not toxic. But if Paladins ever find a way to draw cards quick enough, right? Like, if they ever have like a card draw that is so good that they just consistently draw those cards, you bet they're going to become a combo deck. Yeah. And it's going to become like an absolutely boring snore fest when they win, because their deck won't revolve around it. They'll just be able to sprinkle it in. But I mean, without Life Tap, of course, that possibility just, you know, narrows so much that I'm not worried about it. But it's one of these, it's one of the reasons why, you know, combos in Warlock are really, really, really tricky to implement while making them powerful. Because then suddenly you just make it so every single game it shows up. Like, if every three games you see the combo in action.
Yeah, and I mean, that's pretty much what they've been nerfing against like the last year and a half. You know, starting with Soulfire, and now we're seeing PO, and then Emperor just being gone, I think, fixes a lot of things. So who knows? Maybe didn't need to completely be nerfed based on or be retired or whatever.
Yeah,
but
that's a good point.
You know, my whole point is just that OTK, generally speaking, I will still be firm and say it is completely fine. And I think it needs to be in Hearthstone. It's just the type. You know, the type is where we've gone wrong sometimes. And yes, that needs to be fixed. Okay, well, let's talk about just kind of moving through a little bit more. The Rogue class identity. Okay, so this is the Rogue came up, and you know, this is one of the big concerns, at least I've had, and we've talked about on the show too, is that Rogue. I mean, I mentioned Priest in the past too, but Rogue in particular is going to take a huge hit. You know, during this Hall of Fame reset, as well as just the 2017 reset, right? And it basically came up, and their answer was, you know, like they're asking about what the identity for the Rogue is, and their answer was basically a continuation of what it is right now, which is it's okay. Going to be a little bit of Death Rattle. It's going to be tricks. I love how they call it tricks. That's like the funniest tricks. Thing. And then maybe stealth, tricks, you know, being the other right. thing.
And tricks.
Yeah, I mean, I've been calling tricks the tricks. Right. Yeah, tricks are for kids, guys. what do you guys think of that? Dr. J, any thoughts?
I kind of wish they would go with One Direction in this. I'm a big fan of having identity in classes, and it seems like they're all over the place. Like, there's this stealth identity over here, there's this death rattle identity over here, there's this draw your whole deck turn and with auctioneer identity over here, there's this we have this plan to make your weapon hero power useful, but we haven't done anything for this yet identity over here. I wish they'd like. I understand where you don't want Rogue to always be this. You don't want Rogue to always be the combo class. You don't want Rogue. Maybe you want to give Rogue a tempo version, or maybe you want to give Rogue an aggro version. So I see where they're going with this, but I really wish they would kind of nail it on the head and figure out what they want to do.
Yeah, I agree with you too. And them focusing on the trick, you know, like the trickster the aspect tricks. Of it, really concerns me, because
okay,
the trickster aspect, I think in theory it's fine, and I think it is thematically consistent with the Rogue, but the way they're doing it is not true pickpocketing. It's you're not stealing cards from your opponent, you know, you're actually just deriving value. It's card draw, that's all it is. And the Rogue suffers greatly tempo wise and health wise when having to make those type of plays. So you know, how do they even implement these things, you know, without, I mean, they're going to have super crazy powerful battle cry type of abilities, like shadow, you know, I'm talking things like Shadowcaster and then like Burgle and Swashbuck. Like what are you going to do to like make that better? Cause they tried Ethereal Peddler. Nobody uses that because it's too slow. You know, like it doesn't matter.
I mean, the thing is that archetype might actually just become viable by pushing. Because like Shaku is a great example of a card that, you know, was obviously good. It was obviously good enough. The thing is, what they haven't done, you know, we have Undercity Huckster, we have Swashburglar, we have Shaku the Collector, we've got Ethereal Peddler, we've got Burgle, which is of course the worst of all. But if you remember, Burgle was also the first, which explains why it was so bad. It was like, let's probe the mechanic and see how broken it is. Turns out it's shit. All right, let's slap it for free on 1/1 on curve. Right, like they tried Cut Purse with coins. It didn't work out because it was too restrictive. Sure, let's give Undercity Huckster card advantage straight up. So they've been exploring the design space for the tricks for a while now, and now they finally have a good picture of it, and it's not a good one. It's the picture is these cards don't work very well. They're okay, but they're not, you know, they're not going to be a deck, the center of a deck until we push it. And I think that's if they keep pushing it, that archetype is going to be fine. It's going to be fine by virtue of how uncertain everything is. Like, you'll have no clue what the Rogue's got. I'm not saying it's healthy for the game. I'm saying that shit is going to be good if it gets pushed. And I have no doubt that they'll keep pushing it. Like, it just seems like they're lining themselves up to try to make a Burgle Rogue of sorts.
I mean, that is things I've complained about, like with Cabalist Tome and things. I don't want to play against a deck where I have like completely no idea what he has in his deck.
Yeah,
I agree with you, man. I agree. It's just that if that's an identity Rogues will get, it's like, okay, it's like Mind Vision, Thought Steal, and Mind Games, right? Let's just look back at those cards for Priest and think just how bad those cards are. Aside from Thought Steal and a value matchup, like those cards are just not good. Rogue might get tools like these that are a bit better because they come onto bodies, right? Huckster is on a body. Swashburglar is on a body. Same thing for Shaku. Like, all these cards come in with a sort of card advantage, kind of. You know, it's not always going to be amazing cards that you get, but on average, you'll get something doable. And if at some point rogues get a way to convert those cards into something good, right? Like, think of it as a, what's the name of the card? Like Elise Starseeker. But instead of converting cards into legendaries, it just turns non-rogue cards into stuff. So yeah, suddenly you get like a really good deck out of a janky mechanic. They could do a lot with that stuff.
I get that. Dr. J, what do you think, man?
I'm not excited for that mechanic. I'm not a huge fan of that mechanic. I think it's fun. I think it's a good for casual players, right, that it's a mechanic. I really enjoy the idea of like getting these random cards. But I, from a competitive standpoint, it's just so difficult to play around the whole class set of cards. And then if they're just constantly taking random stuff, I don't really know. I can't play around it. So for instance, Shaku was like, for instance, I was playing one game in my prelims and Shaku gave me Public Defender against Pirate Warrior. I was like, well, I just win this game. Like this, it's crazy.
Yeah, pretty
like,
much.
Yeah,
and I don't like that aspect.
See, that's the thing. It's like, it's not really tricks. You know, they classified it as tricks and outsmarting your opponent, but it's not any of those things. Like, you're not outsmarting anything. You just get cards, and if it's the right, you know what I mean.
I willed the Public Defender. That was the outsmarting.
Yeah, you
willed
it. Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I agree with you guys. Like, it's not outsmarting. Wrong. That's what they've not done, right? Like,
yeah.
The aesthetic. So the aesthetic says you're outsmarting your opponent. The looks of the play you make is, oh, the fantasy, right? I'm a rogue and I'm doing, you know, stealthy tricks to you and you don't know what's coming. That's outsmart. No, my hero's outsmarting you. But in reality, like the two players, like the rogue player is not outsmarting anyone.
Okay, it's just
not doing anything.
Thematically,
so
I'm
the
just like
fantasy.
The
no, but the fantasy is on point. Like, it's absolutely on point. But I don't think the delivery is quite reflecting what the fantasy is supposed to do. So I don't know if they're going to rework the mechanic. It doesn't seem like they will. But if they ever add a card that, as I said, converts non-class cards to something else, suddenly, yes, that's a thing. You know, like, they need to push some like safe value exchange for rogues to turn that quote-unquote uncertainty into something the opponent has to play around and knows is coming.
Yeah, and yeah, I agree. If they want to make it viable, but I just think that it was something that was I felt like should have been more on the fun side, and they're trying to make it viable, and yeah, that could lead to some issues later. I mean, the community always complains, at least the competitive community always complains about, like, you know, just the randomness of it. So we'll have to see what happens there. So the last thing I'll point out is like a question I asked, which was basically about healing across classes, given that Reno Jackson's gone. We don't have any heal bots, obviously, after that, at least not that we know of. So they answered that. They answered that in the form of there will be basically no neutral healing. I mean, they didn't say that definitively, but they pretty much hinted at no neutral healers, at least big ones. But I think they left open that class cards would still be healing, and they mentioned that the healing classes will get more heals and the armor class will get more armor, but they didn't say anything really about, like, you know, the non-healing classes and what happens there. So I'm hopeful that we'll still, you know, maybe see some healing in Warlock, or I don't know, maybe even see some kind of weird bandaging or healing in Rogue or something like that. But if we don't, then that's a bummer. I mean, that's a pretty big bummer, even for Warlock. Like, there's so many cards that take so much health that, you know, Warlocks right now cannot even use those cards, like Cho'Gall or, I mean, yeah, Fel Potion and things like that. I mean, we're just hurting ourselves constantly, and there's a point where it just gets to the point where we can't even play these cards. So, thoughts on that? Healing. What are you hoping to see? What do you think that they're saying there?
So for healing, I don't mind there being class identity with healing. I think that's important to their lore. I think that's important to how the card game and classes are set up. So I don't mind if like warrior and mage are like the only ones that typically have access to like the armor effects, because I know mage has like the ice barrier.
Yeah.
And I'm fine with like maybe not giving rogue heal, because it thematically doesn't make that much sense. I don't know World of Warcraft too much, but I know like you have paladins that heal, you have
some classes do, some don't, but yeah, right now every class does in WoW. So canon is pretty much out the window. Like, they used to have very defined class identity a long time ago, but they've thrown that out for the sake of fun, because it turned out that leveling as a warrior was a miserable experience, since You couldn't heal, so you just died all the time, and I guess they thought it wasn't that fun. It's a change that came in much later as a result of a lot of complaining, which I think a lot of people liked. It took flavor away, but it also made the game more homogeneous, I guess, which kind of sucks. It took out class identity a lot, and I'm not sure if that's a positive or a negative. Well, it's hard
to
say.
It takes out class identity. Oh, okay, so for one, you can have class identity that doesn't involve very important basic mechanics to the game. And I think healing and health is a very basic mechanic that should not be isolated to certain classes. And, you know, some can do better, like you can heal better, but healing generally, I think, should be across the board. And you can even talk about WoW thematically, right? Yeah, rogues, they don't heal. You know, hunters generally don't heal and that sort of thing. But this isn't a team game. You know, this is not like, this is not a game where we group and stuff. This is a game where I play by myself, like, all the time.
That's
true. And I don't have anything in my, backpack that can heal me or anything like that. It's different.
So I actually don't like, I'll be honest with you, I don't like the idea of every class healing in Hearthstone any more than I like it in WoW. I think it takes away a lot of the charm out of the class identity. If that means that a certain class has to have non-healing mitigation tools, I'm fine with that. You know, I'm cool with rogues having spells or like a weapon that makes them immune while attacking. I'm cool with them having a weapon that's going to act as like a parry tool or whatever. Yeah. As long as it's not literally called, I'm popping. Like, if they have a card that reads something like, you know, like back alley potion or some shit, and it's like a one cost heal six, like that's a rogue card and it heals. Like, I don't mind that, as long as they don't make it some jank ass. Oh, I'm sitting here and, you know, just channeling the holy light on myself. Thank God. ability. Okay. That's fine.
Okay. Yeah. What are your thoughts on heal, Dr. J?
I just kind of get at it. I like, from a competitive standpoint, certain classes not having as much access to heal, for the reason that, for instance, like in a matchup like rogue versus pirate warrior, the rogue has to be really careful what they can hit with their dagger.
Yeah.
So they may not necessarily want to take damage, and they may make awkward plays. For instance, like an aggro rogue, maybe I would send a deckhand in over putting my one dagger into a minion because I couldn't afford to take that 3 damage, or I couldn't afford to take that 4 damage. So I think it can add some like interesting play, in the sense of you have to think more about like where you take your damage and where you put your damage. But I can see where it's frustrating sometimes to where you think like this class like may physically have no chance. Like Miracle Rogue versus Pyro Warrior is probably one of the most polarizing matchups, I think, right now, just because they don't have that heal. So I think maybe if you can, like, I don't know, I'm just not a huge fan of it across, because I think classes should have specific weaknesses, but I can understand where heal is one of those, like you were saying, basic things that maybe all classes should have some sort of access to.
And it's only because there's 30 health in Hearthstone. I think if the health total was a little bit higher, I would actually feel more okay with a class not having any kind of a life restore that way. In one example where I think it's kind of nice in terms of just trying to problem solve and tech sometimes, is even just like shaman against like warrior or just a super aggro deck, right? We've seen just more of the Jade Shamans add Jinyu as a way to just get a little bit of health, and it swings the matchup by a lot. So having that option, I think, has always been cool. It's an option that we've seen with Healbot in the past, and I feel like Healbot would work even better like right now, just given over time and what we've learned and how it affects the game. But it sounds like they don't, you know, the era of Healbot's gone, and they don't want it to necessarily come back, you know, at least from a neutral standpoint. So, I'm just hoping that they continue to do something, at least in the classes specifically, so that we can get, you know, we can have the ability to play some of the other cards, some of the control cards. All right. Well, we spent a lot of time on that.
The healing question is really good, because I think, you know, a class identity that I would like rogues to develop, it has more to do with crowd control, like the idea of gouging things. In World of Warcraft, they used to gouge, they used to sap, they used to do all sorts of disabling things without it being healing. And it actually translates into damage mitigation, you know, in Hearthstone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So Vanish would be good if it was playable.
I think Vanish at a cheaper cost would be interesting. You know, their mill would be more of an option. You know, actual resets mid game, I think, is a very interesting scenario, especially for rogue. So it's one thing to maybe consider a 5 or maybe even 4, even if it's just like some of the characters or some of the minions on the board, that'd be cool. But anyways, why don't we move on? And I don't know if we have actually have time for topic of the week anymore. So maybe we'll move because we have so many Mechatorps. But before we do, why don't we give a shout out to some of our patrons? For those of you that have never seen Valuetown or maybe you don't watch us or listen to us every week. Valuetown is 100% funded by you guys and all of our patrons. And we actually have a Patreon set up at patreon.com/valuetown. If you're watching the video, it'll be actually in the description. And we have a lot of patrons that, you know, again, like support us and allow us to do the show every week. Without you guys, we wouldn't be able to do it. So I want to give just spend at least a little bit of a moment each and every week to give a shout out to you guys. And big thanks to our legendary producers, Mike T, Lewis G, Dean P, and some of the others, William C, Gary D, David T, Jim G, Graham S, Zoxand, Michael V, and Morashti. Thank you so much for doing that. And of course, we still have made our Smilestone milestone. So what that means, and I think I've already warned Dr. J about what that means, is that we're going to have to give our best smile here for the next 20 seconds or so, but I forgot to bring up the song, so I need to actually get the song quick.
20 seconds of smiling.
It's like it's crazy how it seems like such a labor, but it's like, really, guys, we can't smile for 20 seconds?
Warm up the face muscles.
Exactly. Okay, I think I've got the song now. So, all right, you guys ready? Let me start the intro song a little bit here we go. Okay, so 20 seconds, guys, and those of you wondering what we're talking about, the page, there's a goal actually on the Patreon page that once we reach it, then we're going to do this. We actually, our next one's the laugh stone, so that's something that you guys might want to consider. Anyways, here we go, 20 seconds, go. Okay, 20 seconds. Smilestone doesn't have to be silent the entire time, but for some reason, we're always like, really, really
how
quiet.
Are we supposed to talk, though? Like, that's my true. Mouth is that's stuck true. In this permanent, like, dumbass grin. Yeah. Like, I can't move this. Like, it doesn't work.
But anyways, thanks so much, guys, to the patrons. Again, you guys are the best. And if you guys, again, do enjoy the show, go to patreon.com/valuetown and consider, you know, making a pledge to us. That'd be awesome. Also, I want to give a shout out just to all the folks that listen to us on iTunes and, you know, have left great reviews in the past. We actually didn't have any this week, which is unfortunate, but, you know, it's going to happen from time to time. But if you do listen to us on iTunes, think about doing that because that really helps people find Valuetown when they're searching for Hearthstone podcasts. So, yeah, it's a good way to help that, even if you don't, you know, have, you know, the money to pledge to the patron or anything like that. Okay, so let's go to Mechatorx Workshop. We've had lots of patrons and viewers send us, I think I have like 30 cards over the last like 2 or 3 weeks.
Oh, God.
And so we're just covering about 10 of them. And they might not be dating. Some of these might be like a few weeks old. So, you know, those of you that are going to have their cards shown.
Bear with us. We've had a lot of backlog on the Mechatorx because last week we got like emergency content that just came up and we had like so much to cover. It was kind of crazy.
Yeah, it definitely was crazy. But okay, the first one is from Victor W. And for those of you that don't know what Mechatorx Workshop is, it's kind of pretty much our custom card segment where we have actually sometimes we bring cards, but we have a lot of the patrons and viewers suggest some cards to us, maybe suggest some cards to Blizzard actually specifically, and we just kind of take a look at them. So the first one we have here is Cowardly Adventurer, 1 mana, 2/3, Enrage, can't attack.
So, priest card.
Yeah, it's a priest card.
Priest.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting, right? Like, we've had, you know, basically if it's damaged, you just can't do anything. I'd actually like to see it at like a 2/4.
I'll go as far as say that this card is, I think as a 2/4, it would be playable. As a 2/3, it seems like it's kind of hard to justify, but it's like a Zombie Chow without a drawback. Maybe it's fine. It's just like, Zombie Chow was never a drawback in Priest anyway.
No, so, it was never a drone. No, definitely.
Yeah, so like, the priests really need a bad zombie chow. Well, I say bad, but it's like a sometimes better zombie chow. I don't know. It's hard to say. The upkeep on this guy is so high, it's really hard to think of him as a one drop because he costs you at least three to use twice. Which, yeah. if you put it that way, suddenly, it's a really costly card.
Yeah, it doesn't seem as good, right? Dr. J, what do you think?
I like the idea of it. I think it's pretty cool. Like, I think most enrages are just gain attack. If I remember correctly, I don't think there's too many enrages that actually have a different effect. So the fact that we're attaching enrage into another effect, like a kind of like an Ancient Watcher effect, is like really cool. But Noxious is right. This mana cost for what it is. Because you have to play it. You then have to kill something. You then have to hero power it. And then, so it just gets to be redundant. So maybe as a 2/4, it'd be playable, like Noxious said.
Yeah.
But I think Cowardly Adventure needs to participate in some Smilestones, looking kind of bad over there.
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah, definitely.
I don't know how I
feel
about this guy. It's like as an enraged card, it doesn't fit Priest much, but I'd like to see a rework of this maybe for some other clash or something. I like the concept.
Yeah. Okay, next up we've got a 9-drop, and this is from Lee C. Unstable Zealot. It's a legendary 9-drop, 6/6. It's a tri-class card, like a warlock, priest, and mage card. And adjacent minions cannot trigger enemy secrets on your turn. So it's kind of a little bit of a positional card, but
it's like a bad flare.
Yeah, it's like a
a really bad flare.
Yeah, I mean, I think this card is too expensive. I think if it was cheaper, it could be interesting. It could be like you said, just something very, very good against freeze mages and hunters. But 9-drop, I don't know. Maybe it's properly statted, given how powerful.
No, man. Like, you've got a 4-mana 2/4 that eats secrets. Like, there's no way this is properly statted. This should be at most a 6-mana 6/6, right?
Like, yeah, it's also the fact that, like, when this comes down in the game, like, secrets are already going to be, like, irrelevant. Because, for instance, the only classes that have secrets are, like, Paladin, Hunter, and Mage, and they're all 2-mana, 3-mana. So it'd be the most useful against Mage. By the time this comes down against Hunter, you're either dead to the hero power or secrets aren't even caught. So I love the idea of this card. I think it's so cool. I think counterplay is cool. I think adding this card, because it's like the 3-mana 4/3 silence a demon. That doesn't see much play. Like, it's a cool thought. It's a cool concept. It's just like the stats in this card are just not worth it. And then that 9-mana right there just makes it literally unplayable.
I'll ask you a question, though. Would you play like an Eater of Secrets as a 4-mana 4/4, like by default as a 1-of in every deck? Because like I'm thinking about the card and I'm like, 4-mana 2/4 seems like a terrible, terrible deal, right?
Even when
it works, right? Even when it works, it's still kind of bad because it doesn't do very much. But like, would you feel like you're getting less punished for teching in the Eater of Secrets to the point of including it if it were a 4/4?
I think you'd get less punished for it being a 4/4, like obviously increasing stats.
I mean, obviously it would be less punishing, but like, would you start running it more? Or would it not matter at all?
I remember when Kizan Mystic was like a playable card in Standard, that like people were putting in a lot of things. Like, they were putting in mostly like Druid, the Reno lock / hand lock, and some other decks just to try and like beat out the Freeze Mage matchup, because it was really good against Freeze Mage. I think it all depends on the popularity of a specific deck on top of what it specifically does. For instance, I think Kizan Mystic would, if it was it's a 4/3, and I think it would.
Yeah.
But I don't necessarily think Eater of Secrets would, because Kizan Mystic swings the game. Eater of Secrets just gets rid of it, which I think is a big difference and discrepancy.
Yeah. The thing I like about this card, though, is that those cards that you mentioned are some of those cards that you just play it. You just play it and just awesome things happen. This card actually is situational, and that's why I think that this card should be, made more powerful in a way too. But the fact is like, you have to have some kind of tempo, and you only benefit if you actually do have tempo in a way. But you're able to finish games. So it generally makes a card weaker being that kind of situational. And that's generally, people don't play those type of cards, but I do like that element of it that adds, some type of preparation for a powerful effect like that. Because you could say it's too powerful. If it was cheaper, let's just say it was like a 5-drop.
No, wouldn't be.
Nah.
Yeah, probably not.
This card is extremely situational. This is as situational as it gets.
Yeah, exactly. So, generally, it's not, you know, probably not going to be strong. Or at least the consistency of it is why it won't be strong. Okay, well, let's. Immortal Lions has like a bunch of cards he like sent me. So we're just going to talk about four of them that are kind of similar. What we have here. Sorry, I just have to bring this up a little bit. We've got three off the bat, and then I'll bring up the next one too. Actually, these three are similar, and then there's one that's a little bit different. So these all have heal theme. They're like all heal themed, and I figured I would just bring them up together, since one's a rogue card, one's a mage card, and one's a warlock card. The first one's a rogue card, 4 mana, 2/6. It's 2 attack, 6 health. It's a rare card, Everlasting Rogue. Battlecry: destroy your own weapon, restore 4 health to your hero for each durability loss. And I kind of liked this. I don't know. I kind of like the fact that
I don't like the theme of it.
The theme for sure doesn't make sense. Like, how the hell am I going to heal by like stabbing myself with my dagger?
Poison-wielding dagger, self-stabbing rogue. Exactly. It should be the name. Like, it's just a really weird name.
Thematically, I agree. But I kind of like it gameplay. I kind of like that fact.
Losing durability for health is just horrible, because you're spending mana for health. So like by proxy, what you're doing is you're spending 2 mana for your hero power, and then you're spending 4 mana to get a card that lets you convert that 2 mana into heal, which basically means you're paying 2 mana for 8 health, but you're also losing your dagger, which is instrumental for you cleaning up the board. So like this card actually doesn't make any sense. If it just went off your durability to heal you, I'd be like, I'm down with that. Like leeching poison, like, you know, he puts a leeching poison on your guy, I'm cool with it. But if it actually consumes the weapon, suddenly I think it's a much, much, much worse card.
Yeah, you also have to think about this card in context of like what will happen during the game. So for instance, you'll go turn one, let's say rogue just passes, then you go hero power, and you're going to be using your hero against, like, for instance, like an aggro deck, you're going to be using your hero power to clean up minions. So by the time this card comes down, you don't have your weapon, or at least your initial dagger up. So it just becomes a 4 mana 2/6. Same thing with Hozon Healer. Like it just will be a 4 mana 2/6. I mean, if Rogue had printed like a 2 mana or 1 mana weapon that was power, like that had synergy with this card, it would be a lot better. But you have to think in context of how the game's going to play out. This card probably wouldn't even be relevant until like turn 6, and in that case, it's like an Inspire effect.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Pretty much.
All right. The next one is a 5 mana 3/6 Mage card, Sorcerer of Rejuvenation, restore 4 health. To your hero for each secret played this game.
I like that one. I'll be honest, I think this one is fantastic. I actually think this one is amazing.
That sounds like basically Reno, like late game Reno.
Well, it's going to be 8 health, I think. I think on average it's 8 health.
Probably.
At most.
The only thing I will say is I wish it said armor instead of health.
Yeah.
Because the mage is like typically armor. But other than that, I enjoy the theme of this card, because it promotes playing secrets. One, it's like the Cabal Crystal Runner or whatever. It promotes playing different, but it also is cool. Like I like this card. It's interesting.
Yeah, I definitely think so too. Just promoting the secret mage, that's definitely something they're trying to do too. So maybe we'll see something like that soon. And then the last one's a 7 mana 6/6 warlock card, Servant of the Betrayer, epic. Battlecry: if you are below 15 health, double your health total.
That's broken. 14 is commonly attained.
Good.
It's like, too often are you at 14 or 12 health in that class? I mean, the question is like, is this better than Abyssal Enforcer? That's the question we have to figure out, because it says below, so it doesn't work against Alex and everything.
I don't think it is, actually.
Yeah.
I think it's close. It's really close between those two. This is more situational. I think Abyssal Enforcer generally is solid. Like the ability is very consistent outside of when you have board control, right? I don't know. What do you think, Doctor? You think this is? I mean, you think this is a good card?
An interesting card.
Better than Abyssal.
I'm indifferent on it. I'm indifferent on it because, for instance, I think the wording's a little weird. Because when I first read it, I was like, does it mean increase your health total from because your health total, I would assume, would be, because your total health you can achieve in Hearthstone is 30. So I didn't know if it meant, I'm assuming that it means if you have 14 health, you go up to 28.
Yes.
And so with that context, this card is either extremely powerful or literally does nothing. Because if you're at three health and you go up to six health, it's like you played a 7-mana Earthen Ring Farseer. And if it's if you're at 14 health and you go 28, you basically played Reno again. So I think it's indifferent. I don't know if it's super powerful. It's definitely interesting because it could lead to, like, for instance, like when people played around Molten Giant, they would put you at a certain range and then try and kill you after that. This card would definitely introduce that kind of counterplay where they would put you at either, if you are below 15 health. Okay, so you have to be below. I don't know if being on 15 counts.
It is a little odd now that you talk about it, because, you know, generally you want to, you know, maximize the amount that you're healing, and that usually means some type of play on your part to allow for that. But with this, it's not. It's like, you know, like I'm trying to think of like the scenario where you would even get to 14. You know, like your opponent has to put you to 14.
Like your opponent kind of dictates 14. The power of this card.
Yeah. So your opponent's just going to damage you as much as possible, you know, kind of like, you know, Lightwell style or something like, not Lightwell style, but Lightspawn style. You know what I mean? It's just like, they just hurt you, and then the benefits from this is not going to be as much, you know, it's not great. So, yeah, so it's interesting. I think it's an interesting way to do heal, and that's kind of why I kind of chose it. But yeah, I don't know if it's better than Abyssal Enforcer though. Okay, the next one we have is a priest card, and this is again Immortal Lions, one from him. It's Archbishop Benedictus. It's a legend, 5/5. It's definitely about 5 mana, 5/5s for priests, man.
I like it, bro. I like that one.
And then Battle Cry, the new maximum health total for hero is 45. Hell yeah, dude. This is I've been waiting for a card to up a maximum health total.
So can I just say that this is probably a bad card, but I like it. You know, like I'll put it that way. An Arena deck and wild is gonna get fun. And this is the type of card that I want to play with, but like I wish it were cheaper just so I could guarantee to be, you know, start healing myself early rather than go up in health, because it's not as though it lets me set my health at 45. It just says my new max health is 45. So then I have to flash heal myself back up or Justicar myself back up. It's really not that great, I don't think. It's only going to be good against like Control Warrior Mirror Match, where suddenly, like Control Deck Mirror Matches, where suddenly you're out of combo range and you're also out of fatigue range for the most part.
So I'm wondering, what if it actually read, not Battle Cry, but at the start of your game, your new maximum health total is 45, but you're still at 30.
I'm down with that, like a Prince Machazar effect. It's in your deck, and it just comes out. Yeah,
but you don't automatically start at 45. You start at 30, but you can heal up to 45.
Yeah,
yeah, I'm down with that.
That'd be great.
It's like an aura, basically. Yeah, I mean,
I definitely like the art on this card.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Yeah, I agree with you too. Jessica is going away too, right?
Yep,
that's going to make it hard to get to 45. But the general concept of upping the health total for, especially something like priest, I think is just a good concept, like something to actually play with, and it would change the meta so much. Like it would change the matchups and how some of the cards are powered too, and what even just the finishing move is for against priest, right? Like it's, I don't know, I feel like it just adds depth that we could need, because 30 health I still feel like is a limiting factor that they like, because it's, you know, it's that whole mobile game thing. But at the same time, you know, why not just create some rare instances where you can up it, you know, and where it actually plays a role. And you know, you're taking a risk by playing this card too. Because like you said, this card's not the greatest card. So
it's going to be a 5/5/5 eventually, which again, you're not excited about.
Yeah.
I think for the most part. So.
Okay. Yep. All right. Last ones are from a patron, Greg W. And I figured we would just add some fun to this, which is a bunch of meme cards here. But they're pretty funny, though, man.
They're horrible, dude.
Come on. So bad.
All right. Funny. Let's go.
All right. So we got the first one. And these are all like pictures of Trump or something, by the way. So we've got a 5-mana 1/6, the thin-skinned politician. When your opponent emotes enraged for plus six attack.
I play this card.
That's awesome, dude.
5 mana 1/6 thin skinned politician. It's Trump's face screaming at the top of his lungs when your opponent emotes enraged for plus six attack. So very, very good card.
I
would play it.
I would play it too.
I would get the emote train going on early, so when they get to me, they've emoted a lot, and I'm gonna drop, and they're like, "Oh crap, what did I just do?"
It would have to be one of those cards where, like, you know, it's like a mystery card you put on the board. Like, you know, there's some
they don't know what it is.
Yeah, Shroud, and they're like, "Wow, oh 7/6 boy." That would be
if someone played
emote Shadow or Death,
I would just keep emoting. Oh God, I want to see how if you emote enough, does it technically die because the game's capped?
Yeah, if you're good enough, you can actually get it out of the board for free.
Exactly. Counterplay.
Stop emoting. I can't even play this. I can't even attack you. God, stop it. Just freaking Nas Dormu and then start emoting nonstop. Oh, God. Okay, the next one is a 6 mana build a wall. Summon 5/5 walls with taunt until your board is full. Your opponent's mana pays for the wall.
Card is awesome.
Oh my god. All right. The next one is a 4 mana increase to security. When your opponent summons a minion, it waits 2 turns for extra. I don't know, like, with the extra security screening. Maybe it waits 2 turns before it's being played. I think that would be pretty funny. And then the last one, it's a picture of the inauguration. 2 mana, largest crowd ever. 2/3. If you have 10 or more people spectating, gain +10/+10.
That's actually a really fucking awesome concept.
Isn't it?
I would just like to point out that I would Tavern Brawl the shit out of cards like these. If Blizzard were to make, like, I don't know if you guys saw the early cards that were created in the very early days. There was a card that said whenever you emote, you take damage. Whenever you hover over it, you take damage. Your screen is flipped upside down. Like, all these cards were removed in the alpha. Because, of course, you know, Hearthstone wouldn't be balanced with those cards. But they could do a Tavern Brawl with stuff like this, where if you get a bunch of friends in, you get like a 12-3, like a 12-15 on the board on turn 2. And the guy's like, well, I guess I'm done. So the meta becomes like this clunky thing where people have like their
like Hunger Games.
Everybody, get in here.
Everybody, get in here.
It's going to be awkward when you've got like 10 people viewing you and you're like, all right, I'm going to play this card, guys. And the guy's like, all right, be right back. And
then they just leave.
If you play a 2/3, he comes back and like, what did I miss?
No, that would be pretty funny. Oh, man. But getting back to the thin skin politician, it'd be pretty funny if you could affect each other's emotes were affecting one card, so like you guys would just have emote.
Are you spamming emotes?
Yeah, like
I heard
the time before emotes, and then like I get it in there before
counterplay, man.
Oh my god, that'd be so.
The thing is, the guy who's attacking has a harder time because he's got to emote and click, right? So he's got like click and drag. So he's technically got a window of opportunity where the opponent can like counter emote to attack of the
counter emote.
Mechanics, man. Hearthstone mechanics, baby. Yeah. Okay, well, anyways, I thought we'd have a little bit of fun with just some, at least some cards from the patron. Thanks so much, Greg W., for those, and as well as Victor W., Lee C., and Immortal Lion. But why don't we move on to the Q&A here? We've got one question, actually, from Doom1491, and if you guys want to send in your question for next week, go ahead and do that by emailing valuetown@chainmanv.tv, and we'll try to read out the emails next week. So Doom1491 thinks he has a solution to Jade Mechanics not being so oppressive. He suggests if you summon a Jade Golem, he should get attack and defense of the number of Jade Golems died before +1. So if you go turn 4 Spirit Jade into 1/1, if you go turn 4 Jade Spirit into a 1/1 Jade Golem, your opponent doesn't destroy them. You can't trade. Not sure.
So what he means is if you play Jade Golems, they're only going to get buffed if the previous Jade Golems have died. So you can't go for like an insane Jade Golem spam that are going to go like 6/6, 7/7.
Yeah, I know.
The thing is, like, a board full of 6/6s is just as bad as, you know, the rest. So in my mind, like, leaving 1/1s up so you don't see a 2/2 is probably the easiest way to die. It's like saying, let's not kill patches because 2-2 patches might come out. It's like, no, dude. Like, I'm not touching that guy. Like, you have to kill the damage that comes in as it does. And I think what also makes this suggestion, although probably, you know, interesting balance-wise to test, unacceptable for Hearthstone, is just, you know, it's too complicated. Unless every single Jade Golem reads Death Rattle, give your Jade Golems +1/+1. And then it becomes like a Death Rattle mechanic, in which case does it really, you know, is that what you're looking to make out of this card? Out of the mechanic. I don't know.
I know what you mean. Yeah. It would make things better. No question it would. Because then sure, the value trade, I mean, they'd obviously be taking an inefficient value trade many times with the existing Jade Golem on the board. But yeah, I know what you mean, though. It's a little bit complicated, you know, just even explaining this or even just trying to figure out how this works, I think, took a second there. And that generally doesn't pass the Blizzard Lithness test, right? But it's an interesting concept, though. I do think that something like that will either need to be done to Jade if they don't make counter Jade cards, just to alleviate just the +1/+1 and how easy it is just to scale up. What do you think about this, Dr. J?
I don't really fix it. I don't think it fixes really that much. I don't think it fixes really anything. I'm almost wondering if it's like, I know the Jade mechanic obviously can get out of hand, but like, would the Jade mechanic be as bad if we had a bunch of Jade Spirit-ish cards? Like, because for instance, I'm looking at the Jade cards right now, like Aya Blackclaw is insane, Jade Lightning's insane, Jade Claws is insane. I wonder if the Jade mechanic would be as bad if like the Jade card, like they just weren't like attached to such powerful cards.
They're slow.
Yeah. Like for instance, like I think Jade Spirit's a prime example of like, I think like I even cut it from Jade Shaman at one point because I was like, this card just, it doesn't fit the cut. So if like all the Jade cards were like that, like they'd still be, I think they'd still be played and maybe powerful on specific decks like Jade Druid, but they may not necessarily be oppressive and like all the Jade cards. I think the rogue ones are good examples.
I think the rogue is like my favorite Jade deck because in order to make the Jade mechanic in that deck get out of hand, they have to go through so many hoops. Yeah, they have to like play Unearthed Raptor on their Jade Swarmer. Yeah. They have to play Shadowcaster on Jank just to bring it back. Like, they have to do crazy shit and then finish it up with the Nuzzolth. And that's awesome. But Trickster, when your Jade mechanic just self-builds, because that's really what Druid and Shaman have, really. It's like Druid more so than Shaman even. Like, I'd say Druid is the least complex Jade deck to build. Shaman is next up, and Jade is the most complicated. But it turns out that Jade is such a good mechanic when it's, you know, linear that, you know, going for the complexity of deck building isn't really a good option. Yeah. You might as well just stick to the basics and play them on curve as they come. Hence why Shaman has a better chance than Rogue at getting the mechanic to work. But I love the Jade Rogue. I just love works together. Like it feels like it's a deck building puzzle to make work, and it's great. I actually think that deck is fantastic.
Yeah, I think so too. You know, if you're going to have something that just scales out of control, make it require some skill. You know, make it require some sacrifices and problem solving to be able to reach it. Because, you know, that Rogue deck is fun and cool, but it's not very consistent, you know, so you have to figure out a way.
Not.
You have to figure out a way to make it more consistent. And that's the challenge, you know, and that's how it should be for a reward so high as the Jade, in my opinion. So yeah, anyways, you know, thanks for that email, Doom. I think that's going to be it, guys, for the questions. We don't have any more questions. Oh, I did skip one thing, which was we had a community post in Reddit that was quite good that lists out all the, are just a bunch of free to play decks for new players, you know, and kind of like mapping out the cost of the dust. And I thought it was really good. I figured I'd just bring it up. It was posted by John314159. I'll post it here in Twitch chat, and it's on the show notes too. So for all of you that you know, want to know some of the links that we talk about on the show, you can always find the show note links on championv.tv, or if you're a patron, obviously the patron posts have them on there too. You can always find that. Okay. I was just looking at the Twitch chat. I never look at Twitch chat. This is why I don't look at Twitch chat, because it totally distracts me. But
I see Raven's question right there.
Exactly. Dr. J or Dr. Jikaninki. So I can say it. Thanks for being on the show, man. So it's great having you on, and you know, I think getting your opinions and hearing your story at HTT, I think was amazing today.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me on. This is a great opportunity. I really enjoyed it. Thank you all again. This is awesome. And y'all have had me on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, you have any shout outs you want to do? Where can people find you?
They can find me at on Twitter at Dr. Jikininki, JIKININKI.
It's not that bad. Guys.
Yeah, exactly. It's like right there or something. And then I will be streaming more consistently now at twitch.tv/Dr. Jikininki. So
nice.
That's about it. That's where you can find me. Shout outs. I think I really want to shout out one person in particular. I won't do too many shout outs, but the one person in particular is Toby. I think he contacted you, Chan Man, to try and get me on.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, exactly. Yeah, I really appreciate it to him for getting me on. It means a lot to me for me to have this experience to do it. And then just some local friends and stuff. So thank y'all.
No, Toby, and just to give you a little backstory on that, I was doing one of my shows. Yeah, I was doing the overview, and it was like the post show, the overview, and I was trying to figure out who to have on for the Value Town. And, you know, last week I tried to have Pavel, but Pavel just is impossible to get a hold of. So I just kind of thinking this week, it's like, it didn't dawn on me to you know, ask to see if you would be on. It's just because I don't actually know you personally. And then he like brought it up, and I'm like, you know what? Yeah, you know, why don't we do that? And then I you know, he was able to get in touch with you, and I think I messaged you too at the same time on Twitch.
Yeah.
And then he was able to get in touch with you first, and you know, that's why we're here, and that's like awesome. So yeah, big shout out to him too for me. Noxious, shout outs?
I shout out to Complexity as usual. You know, my guys in Complexity are just pretty awesome still. And
still.
Yep. Nothing changed since last time I did shout outs. If you want to find me, I'm on YouTube, Noxious Jelly Chef, and Twitch, Noxious_HS. These days, though, I'll be honest, in terms of streaming, I've been doing more For Honor than Hearthstone. Since the game has... It has... it's actually... I will say that before, you know, I'm done with my shout outs. I'll parasite this end of show to say that game is the first game in a long time that has made me want to improve so much so that I just don't want to let it, you know, put it down. And this is something that I think you don't get with every game. And when it comes up, you just need to binge on it. And that's what I've been doing.
What are you saying, Noxious? What are you saying?
Why don't you just give me bigger numbers and Primal Ancients drops in Diablo 3?
Oh my gosh. No, For Honor, I know a lot of people. I've been meaning to give it a try, but I haven't quite gotten there. That's $60. That's $60 is still like waiting. I gotta be really motivated to play it. Like I can't just play it for an hour. Like
it looks like 8 hours to 12 hours a day, dude. It's ridiculous. I can't put it down. It's literally a full time job.
No, that's crazy. That's crazy.
I just like lobbery. I play one character. One character out of 12 for like 8 to 12 hours a day just to get it. It's so good.
Oh man, that sounds crazy. But yeah, I gotta check it out definitely soon. For me, I'll give a shout out to the two of you guys, Dr. J and Noxious, for doing the show, of course, with me. Raven, answer your question along a lot more levels, okay? That's how you fix ladder right now, at least the whole rank 20 thing.
Shadowverse go.
Exactly. Yeah, I've summed it up for you, just because you don't have to watch the beginning of this pod now. Big shout out to all you guys for watching, of course. I know a lot, you know, like Trinity's always going on. So like really appreciative with Trinity going on, you guys like watch us. So just a few more weeks of that, and hopefully we won't be overlapping with like the biggest event in Hearthstone. I'm just like crazy doing that. Also, you can watch the VODs on youtube.com/ChanManV, as well as all the other VODs of the shows that we've done in the past. We've done some awesome ones recently too, guys. So definitely go and check that out. iTunes will be available for those of you that like to listen to podcasts. You can find us there, search for Hearthstone, leave us good reviews if you like it, as well as Google Podcasts, as well as SoundCloud too. I think a lot of people don't realize we're in SoundCloud because we don't get that many people listening there, but we're there too. You can see all the show posts with the show notes, like again, on chamanv.tv, so check that out. And follow the show Twitter at ValueTownGG. And I feel like I'm forgetting one more thing. Oh! We're doing actually a Streamer Showdown Overwatch edition. So if you're into Overwatch, yeah. So we're going to be doing that on Friday if you're into Overwatch. So definitely check that out. And then Hearthstone will be back around, hopefully with some very special guests working on that right now. So let you know really, really soon. And then that's going to be it, guys, for Value Town. So for Dr. Jikininki, right? Jikininki Noxious and myself. I'm so bad at that. And myself, Champ MV. We'll see you next week, guys.
Later.
See ya.